Welcome to Dietitians Uncorked, a podcast hosted by Kat and Kelly, two registered dietitians who co-founded Nutriving, a virtual nutrition practice. We talk all things food, nutrition, life, and of course, wine. This is a judgment-free zone where all foods fit and all bodies are welcome. Thanks for listening. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you are listening to this. We are so happy to have you here for another episode of Dietitians Uncorked. This is Kelly speaking, just giving you a quick intro to what is actually our very first episode where we have a guest on with us. So you're about to hear an incredible conversation between myself, Kat, and Natalie Novak. She's a fellow registered dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor, and she is a dear friend of mine from grad school. So Natalie has her own business called Benevolent Bodies. She offers one-on-one intuitive eating counseling services, eating disorder recovery counseling, a group cooking in the kitchen course, and she also has a future gentle nutrition course coming out. And we are talking all things with intuitive eating with her today. She's going to go through what is her definition of intuitive eating, how does she use this framework with clients, what are some of the common myths around intuitive eating. So if you've maybe heard of intuitive eating before, but you're not quite sure exactly what it's referring to, this is the episode for you. Natalie is an incredibly eloquent speaker. There are so many good nuggets of wisdom here. We really dive into a lot of complexity in the world of nutrition. So that conversation is coming at you right now.
Well, thank you so much for being in our podcast. We are so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah. So the first question we wanted to ask you is, how would you define intuitive eating? I think we talk about it in our podcast. We have mentioned it in previous episodes, but you're an expert, and we would love to hear kind of how you define it and what is the sort of intention of the framework of intuitive eating?
Yeah, so the way that I describe intuitive eating to either clients or individuals who are curious about it is really an attunement model of being able to tap into what your internal body is telling you, and also being able to take the external messages of what we've been told, or external messages around nutrition guidelines, right? And more of like your medical nutrition therapy, and having this dynamic interplay of that internal and external world to really be able to have this individualized approach to nutrition that's incorporating your authentic self, right? So when it comes to both health and the physical body, but also incorporating your thoughts and your feelings and the emotions and kind of that spiritual element as well. So I know that's really broad, and we can dive deeper into that.
That was so eloquent.
Yes.
I'm so glad it's being recorded.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I think that like link between, I often talk about that with patients, like helping them see, you know, there's a difference. There often can be a difference between internal messaging and external. And for some, I've noticed that when I introduce that concept to some clients, their mind is blown. They're just like, wait, what? Like, I can actually, how do you do, you know, some people don't even understand what you're speaking about when you say like internal versus external. And so it's always so interesting when speaking with people, because you really have to like take cues about what they're saying to figure out like, where's your baseline, right? Because people come to us at all different stages of life, you know, depending on what they've been through. And you, to be a good clinician, I feel like you really have to listen and like open your mind and try to identify like, where are they on that, you know, journey, right? On that scale.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, to tell somebody that you can trust your own body to guide eating is mind blowing and really fearful. And I think one of the biggest barriers, right, to entering this model, because we've been robbed, right, of that autonomy around yes, you can trust yourself, because people might have really engaged with diet culture, especially starting from a young age, depending on mm-hmm. what some of those messages were from well-intending people, right? Like parents and, you know, sisters and moms and siblings and friends that might want the best for you. Maybe they didn't know any better. And then you can subscribe to various different external patterns, whether it's calorie counting or like macro tracking or avoiding specific food groups. And so no wonder when you're told, like, listen to your body, right? Like, it can tell you. People are like, not mine, not my body.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, we don't talk about nutrition or, you know, the active dieting of patterns of eating to include that feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it hardly is ever mentioned in a dieting prescription, like, okay, but if you're full or if you're hungry or if you're exhausted or if you're this or that, there's hardly ever that sort of inclusion of sort of paying attention to what your body's feedback is saying, which is insane to me mm-hmm. now being on the other end of this conversation on the other side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Natalie, as an intuitive eating counselor, like, you've gone through this additional, you know, training, the certification, is that the right word, right? It's a certification. I don't know why I said it so weird just now. But often people, you know, you at this point have been through so much training, not only our like formal nutrition training, but you've sought out additional, you know, training that, I mean, honestly, in our grad program was not covered at all. And I'm sure most dietitians can say the same. So when we're first exposed to it, you know, it's kind of jarring. And then you think about, you know, clients and people that we work with who have dieted for decades, you know, often. So it's no wonder, like, I'm not, when people react like that, I'm like, of course, like, I totally get it, because you, Natalie, as an intuitive eating counselor, might be the very first person to even like put that thought mm-hmm. in their head, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that, I guess, when you think about,
yeah, how do you do that?
Yeah, because sometimes people are like, well, I've been told this by so many other sources my entire life, and now you're telling me something different, you know? How do you do that? How
is magic? You know, it's tough, right? So whether you are, you know, you have the certification or you understand the framework and are really trying to introduce that to somebody, I think it's all great and beautiful. But what I remember and what I tell people too, to sort of validate their experience, is that, you know, this might be the first touch point on being able to come into what works for you and internally focus on that. And we might have an hour a week, right? Or maybe we meet an hour every 2 weeks. Somebody might have a therapist that's also aligned and they can have that support system. But what about the 23 hours of the day times every other day of the week mm-hmm. that you're, you know, at your worksite wellness program that's encouraging weight loss, or your friends are making comments about body and things like that? It can be really hard to kind of stay focused in what we're talking about in session. But one of the first things that I do is kind of do an assessment of how has dieting impacted your life, right? And so looking back at, you know, what was your relationship like to food? What are some of the external dieting plans that you have engaged in? And it's not to like shame anybody, right? Or to say like, you know, this is why like X, Y, or Z might have happened, mm-hmm. but really to just kind of survey and say, you know, psychologically, how has this affected you? Do you feel like you can't go out to eat with friends because fear of food, right? Or do you feel like you have been disconnected to hunger and fullness cues? There might have been like metabolic changes that have happened. Some of the standard like yo-yo dieting, right? Like rebound weight gain mm-hmm. is something mm-hmm. that we see all the time. You know, how has this impacted your ability to implement like social health or practice financial health, right? When it comes to that. And we kind of do this survey to say, okay, yeah, you know, I feel anxious around food. I feel disconnected from my body's hunger cues. I feel fatigued. You know, I don't go out to eat with my friends because I'm on a diet, right? And so that survey of how it's personally impacted your life is something that I encourage people to kind of come back to when they might be, what's the word, like, enticed, right, by like friends or coworkers mm-hmm. or somebody else mm-hmm. to kind of go back into dieting and be like, well, come back to yourself, right? Like, we have research, we have science, and in session I can give that education and share awesome podcasts like yours, you know, to be able to keep that buzz in the ear. But, you know, we live in the world that we live in, and it's the water we swim mm-hmm. in. So people are oftentimes tempted to go back. But if you can kind of come back and be like, hold on, I'm here for a reason. It's because all this stuff didn't work before. That's really the first step in being able to trust yourself, right? And kind of follow, well, what works for me? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. it's so true that's the water that we submit, you know, it's like kind of like that app.
Totally.
Foster Wallace, I think it's his name. He described the two young fish in the water, just swimming along, and then there's an older fish that comes along and says, "How's the water?" And they sort of look at each other and they're like, "What is water?"
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that is the dieting world that we live in. I mean, it's just so much ingrained into every aspect of how we do life with food in our bodies. It's difficult to have a perspective where you kind of separate yourself and your own health apart from that.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're, as healthcare providers, the only people, you know, that mm-hmm. are supporting a different mode or are supporting and encouraging and guiding a different way, then it can be really hard for people to stick with that on the outside. So another question that I ask people is to just sort of like examine, right? Like, what systems are in place within your social group, your friend group, maybe your workplace that are keeping you stuck, you know, in disordered eating. And it's just a seed that we plant, right? Because community is super important in being able to find like-minded people, but like we're talking about, right? It's the water you swim in. So more often than not, you're probably surrounded by people who are still living in that diet culture, but being able to, you know, see, okay, well, that's for them, and I'm trying to go a different way and kind of, you know, look at that external versus internal and focus more on, like, what works for me individually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many messages out there that people are receiving from a variety of sources, and we're just, you know, bombarded by it, especially with, you know, smartphones and social media. It's just like you're constantly forced to process information and like decide how you feel about something and how it's going to affect you. And that can be exhausting, like entirely depleting. Speaking of the water we swim in, I want to transition us to a little bit. So some people you work with might have no idea what intuitive eating is, but I'm sure there's also some people who maybe have, you know, heard of it before. So I want to move us and kind of hear from you, Natalie, about what do you feel like are some of the most common myths of intuitive eating that you have seen?
Yeah. I think one of the most common myths is, well, if I practice intuitive eating and give myself this unconditional permission to eat all foods, you know, then most certainly I'm going to be eating pizza every day for dinner, or I'm for sure going to be having ice cream. And, you know, like my sister always jokes and she's like, I intuitively want the whole pint of Haagen-Dazs or whatever it happens to be. And that is, you know, that's the biggest myth is that, well, if I don't have an external plan telling me what, how much, when, you know, this and eat this, not that, I can't trust myself because my body is going to always want this type of food. And what the research shows and what I've seen in this practice, and even personally, you know, experienced myself, is it's really the foods that, you know, you restrict yourself from or that you deny that you have this sort of like, I can't get enough of it and I want that. So it's always a function of deprivation. And I think, you know, COVID and the pandemic was the sort of perfect kind of neutral, I don't know about neutral, but like it's a non-food or a non-body example where if you're told you're not going to have access to food, you're not going to have access to toilet paper, you're seeing in the shelves, like there is not a lot of food and toilet paper. What did we all do? I mean, we all frantically went and stocked up and bought massive amounts of beans and rice and, you know, foods that keep for a long time, as well as toilet paper, right? Because there was that threat. And so that tends to happen, right? Where if I'm on a specific type of diet where I can't have bread or carbs, and then I'm being told, you know, give yourself unconditional permission to eat, there oftentimes is this honeymoon phase where you can't get enough of the carbs, you can't get enough of bread. It's always what you've been restricted in. But the opposite is also true, right? When you have abundance and when you have the ability to eat from various different food groups, it becomes less enticing. It becomes less sexy when you're told, like, yeah, have ice cream every single day. Eventually, you're going to burn out, right? Where you're like, I don't really want that flavor anymore. My body is craving something else. But when we try to control that with the mind of like, okay, I'll do it, Natalie, but only for 3 days. If I want ice cream by day four, like I got to put a stop to this. That's when we tend to like prolong the process. It's really, really difficult to kind of trust that. But it is, you know, it is true. And I've seen that happen for many people where they're like, you know, by day X, Y, or Z, I really don't want that food anymore. And my body is starting to crave something else. And that I think is one of the biggest myths and like validly one of the hardest ones, right? And most fearful.
Yeah. Man, that analogy was so good. Like you were saying, I was like, I know where this is going. This is genius. Like we did a little pre-show, us three, for our listeners, like before we signed on, and just listening to Natalie speak, I was like, this is going to be amazing. It's just, it's so nice to have you on here and, you know, have, like, Kat and I have been podcasting together for, you're actually our first guest. I don't think we shared that with you. Yeah. But it's just, it's so nice to hear, you know, what other clinicians are seeing in the field and like what you're experiencing. And I think that can be really valuable for our listeners to hear. And, you know, hopefully people who follow you as well, just to know that like, you're not alone and what you're feeling is entirely valid. Like it all adds up, right? Yeah. When we think about what we've been exposed to and what you potentially went through before you kind of step into the intuitive eating world.
Yeah. And I find that like, if we give an example that's not food related, you know, around habituation or that deprivation, people are like, oh, okay. Like, you know, when you start a new job or you start dating a new partner or something like that, that it's like the most exciting thing and everything is like, ooh, it's so exciting and sexy and whatever. And then like time goes on and that job or that person is always there and you're like, oh, like whatever, you know, like you might still be great, but you're not like God's gift to the world anymore. And it's the same thing with food. I think it's just a lot more scary because of the world that we live in and that morality and that judgment around, you know, food and body and all those things.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you, kind of pick your brain a little bit on this. We've tried to utilize this framework and sort of present it to our clients in a way that does not feel incredibly threatening to them, because it's, you're kind of shaking the boat a little bit in their perspective of what dieting means, what like getting healthy means. But you've been doing this for a while, and I would love if you could share how you've seen intuitive eating help people heal, sort of coming out of the dieting world. Like if you could share a little bit about that, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things, and I think you're really wise to know that as people enter this, you know, it's a new framework, and it can be confusing, and also like, you know, how are we defining health, right? That's very, very different. So I always tell people, you know, I'm here to meet you where you're at, right? And we're sort of doing this together. It's an individualized nutrition approach, and we're not gonna nail it overnight. And I also don't have the answers, right? I don't live in anybody's body. So we really have to kind of collect that data. And I think sometimes within intuitive eating, there's this people will, another kind of like myth too is you have to do it perfectly, right? You have to nail the hunger, nail the fullness. You must not care about, you know, weight, and you have to like, you know, do all these things perfectly. And even within like the community of people who practice within intuitive eating, sometimes there is a little bit of like, you know, if you're not like all in, then you're not like doing it correctly. And I think that can scare people too. So I always just tell people like, we're, you know, we're dancing together, right? And sometimes we need to take a break, and sometimes we can come back into it. And when you're, when you kind of give people that sort of like patience and the recognition that like, we're in this together, but ultimately you're driving the bus, right? Like, I'm DJ and I'm here on the side, like guiding you, and we're on this road trip together, but you're driving. They're the ones that can really guide that. And one of the most, my favorite thing about the intuitive eating process is that it transfers over into other areas of life. So once people start to say, okay, you know, that principle of honoring your hunger, we're talking not only about what hunger feels like, but the logical piece of like, yep, I gotta refuel the cells in my body every 3 to 4 hours. I start to feel more and more confident with the consistency of what hunger feels like, feel more and more confident of the consistency with what fullness feels like. And then magically what starts to happen is people are like, okay, cool. Like, this feels comfortable in terms of fullness and satisfaction. Let me challenge some of those foods, right? Let me challenge this idea that I can't trust myself around ice cream, right? And we start to tap into, what does it feel like to be comfortably full? What's that level of satisfaction that feels good for you on your taste buds, not only your taste buds, but also in your body, that after you eat the dessert or after you eat the, you know, meal or snack that is kind of fearful for you, it also feels good physically in your body, right? And people start to gain that confidence. It takes time for sure. But then it, we can, you know, take that confidence into other areas of, well, what kind of exercise feels good for you, right? Like, can we liberalize that it doesn't have to be, you know, this rigorous, like, specific plan where you have to be burning, you know, so many calories, or your heart rate has to be super high, or you have to do it so many days a week. We can start to encourage, like, well, what do you like about swimming? And what do you like about dancing and yoga? And start to empower that. And my favorite thing is we always get to this point where, like, people kind of, like, nail the principles. And it can take 6 months. It can take a year. It can take however long it does. But people start to feel confident in those areas. They don't necessarily want to let go because they really, really like the support of having, you know, somebody who's hearing them, right? And they're like, okay, cool. But then it starts to transfer over into other areas. So I've had clients who have built this confidence around, no, damn it. Like, I'm not going to do what my doctor tells me to do in terms of like keto or intermittent fasting. Like, I know what feels good for me. And then they start to question other areas of life. Like, is this job working for me? Like, is this relationship working for me? Is this like, you know, routine around whatever it is that they're doing? And they start to take that confidence in what you found in your body and apply it to other areas of life. And that is like the absolute coolest thing to see, because, you know, it's starting with the basics and then it's like transferring over to other areas of life. And I can't help but think and know and feel that like you're acting as a role model for other people around you, you know, and we need more of that, right? Because of the water that we swim in, everybody is talking about dieting and weight loss and all this stuff. But then to have somebody who's empowered and confident around not only like food and body, but also boundaries and like, you know, work dynamics. I think we see that and we pick up on it and you're like, oh, like that person's got it going on, you know, and that's like the most beautiful part of all of it to me, is how it can kind of transfer over into other areas of life.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yay for empowerment.
Yay for empowerment, right. For sure. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I've ever explicitly thought about that, but that makes me so happy, because it's like, every client, you know, that we work with and that we positively impact, even if it's someone you work with maybe for a short time, maybe for a longer time, you truly don't know the full extent, like, of your impact. And thinking about them influencing family members and friends and coworkers, guys, we're just like do-gooders.
Yeah. Right?
Spreading the love.
Yeah.
Well, and then too is like you're passing on this concept that I think we have at some point understood that like it's really not like we're not the experts of nutrition, and so we need to completely trust an outside source to tell us what is what we're supposed to be doing, and I'm not supposed to trust my body, and we're just giving that right back. Like, listen, you are the expert of your own body, and no one else can tell you how you actually feel when it comes to nutrition, when it comes to like eating something that you love or eating something you don't love, and I'm forcing you to eat it. You know, it's in a way you're helping people create boundaries on something that's incredibly personal, yet we understand it not to be something we're supposed to be involved in. So it's you know, that it makes sense to me that somebody would take this and then run with it in other aspects of your life, because you're like, no, I do get to create my own boundaries, and this does feel healthy, and this doesn't feel healthy, or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost sometimes it's like people, the way that many nutrition education programs might be delivered, or like that communication about information related to nutrition, is almost like academic in a way. I don't know if that's the right word I'm looking for, but like academic, kind of like distanced from yourself, like not human enough, you know? And I feel like that's one of the major strengths of intuitive eating, is that it brings in the humanity and shows people that that should be part of nutrition, like human nutrition, like that is what it is, right? It's not just nutrition, it's human nutrition, and how the interplay between the myriad of factors that, you know, we're exposed to, social environments, like all the different environments, how that kind of like culminates is very unique and like individual for each person. But oftentimes I think that's like completely left off, right? You have a handout that's like, eat a quarter cup of nuts and have a half a piece of toast, blah, blah, blah. Like, just maybe well-intentioned at one time, but so fucked up now. Like, that, when I see stuff like that, it just hurts my soul, because people take that and like they think that that's, if a doctor gives that to someone like that, there's a lot of weight behind that, and people, you know, understandably, like, think that that's what they should do. But there's this whole other world that Natalie is helping us discuss today. And I really, I am like loving this conversation. I hope our listeners just kind of like are able to expand their minds a little bit, just kind of listening to us talk about these concepts today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that you mentioned the human piece of human nutrition, because like, it's so wild to think that, you know, what, when you look at a handout, and of course, like you said, Kelly, you know, of course you were given this by a healthcare provider, by a medical professional, and you just want to take care of your health. So you're like, okay, like portioning, calorie counting, all these things, it's with good intention. But then when you think about it, it's like, how do you know, like, what a quarter cup of something is going to be for an individual is going to be so different for all three of us here, right? We all have different genetic metabolisms. It's not considering anything like, you know, your movement, or whether you're on your menstrual cycle, or like, you know, what everything else that you ate, or your GI bugs, and like all this complexity. And so it's like, to me, like learning about metabolism and the body and food and the way that it all like scientifically breaks down is super cool. And it's kind of like laughable that we just like dumb it down to calories in or calories out, or like specific portions, when really, when you're looking at the human piece, you got to think about well, what access do people have to foods, right? Like, you know, where do you live and do you have access to fresh fruits and vegetables? What's your financial situation like? Mm-hmm. What's your culture mm-hmm. like, right? Like, sometimes we can be really harming somebody's cultural identity by telling them you can't eat white rice anymore because that's not healthy, right? Or if you have a tradition with your family to, I don't know, do whatever it is that you do for breakfast every day, and all of a sudden that's being, you know, taken away from you. Like, we're robbing and impacting all these other areas of health that diet culture just narrows down on physical health, right, in the physical body. But we're not looking at cultural health, financial health, spiritual health. And that, to me, is like what intuitive eating kind of brings back in, is let's look at all of the bubbles. And that can be a really nice way for people to almost like give themselves a little bit of grace too, right? With like, oh man, I went through the drive-thru and now I'm feeling really, really guilty. It's like, okay, but did that help your time management, right? Were you able to go home and cook a full meal, or was it quicker for you to go and do that and actually eat something instead of restrict, right? Or instead of skip that meal, or instead of burn yourself out by feeling the need to like constantly cook and prep. And so that human piece around what are all of the buckets of health and all the buckets of complexity can also be really helpful in being able to think of like, why do we make the food decisions that we do? And it's not as black mm-hmm. and white. And that's what's not sustainable, right? That's what the research shows mm-hmm. time and time again, is nobody's going to, I mean, you really can't live on any one diet and, you know, have like positive mental health with that. I don't yeah. think, you know, I think that's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what's insane about that narrative of this is a prescription diet for you is sometimes that in order to meet that, you have to have the sort of militant mindset in order to be able to complete this, you know, prescriptive diet. And the way that some people are able to do that, which I think we use exercise in this way sometimes, but especially dieting, is you have to connect to some sort of sometimes very negative self-talk, just like you talk to yourself as you're like the angry principal of your school. And that's like the only way you can kind of, I don't know, get the shit done. And then I feel like when a client comes to you as a dietitian, they're like, you need to talk to me this way. Like, you need to be meaner to me. I'm like, I'm not about to partner with this like toxic level of like negative self-talk to motivate you to right. like stick to this diet that is not working.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. we're harming your mental health. We are treating you like a child, and you are a human being with needs, emotional needs. I mean, like you're talking about cultural needs, a much bigger perspective that makes you human, which food is part of that. And so I will not talk to you this way, even though you feel like that's the answer. And I don't know, I've literally had that conversation with a patient once.
Yeah.
And he was like, you need to be harder on me. I was like, I will not yell at you, sir.
Yeah.
This guy was like much older than me too. So it was like, I will not be your mother here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's because I think too, there was zero self-compassion in that perspective. This is a person who had a busy life, who had a busy schedule, who at times went long periods without being able to eat because he was caring for others. So, you know, we can't do this. That's not very healthy for anybody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think too, people are like the way that dynamic that you just explained, it's like people have been treated, you know, to some extent, like they can't trust mm-hmm. themselves and like yeah. it's their fault, right? Whatever is going on with their health, like it's solely your fault because you didn't do X, mm-hmm, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. So people receive that message for so long. So it totally makes sense that they're like, well, I need guidance, right? I need a mom or like a food police, because I certainly couldn't make that judgment, you know, for myself. And that just sure. creates this like terrible spiral of shame and, you know, not being able to trust yourself, which of course is going to impact your ability to listen to yourself and, you know, eat intuitively, right? Like tune yeah. inwards. because they've had decades of practice doing the opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, like, what's interesting, too, is when you narrow down on that, like, individual, right, it's my responsibility, like, my fault, I need to, like, take care of myself. You know, within the healthcare system, I don't think it was always like that. I'd be curious to, like, look at, you know, the decades of how healthcare was. But if you look at, you know, different cultures and different traditions and the way that there is a community focus on being able to take care of health, within our Western healthcare model, there is that sort of, like, okay, now you need to lose weight and you need to do everything and you need to go come back in 6 months and we'll kind of assess and see how you did, right? And so it's like, and I think part of that has to do with this pressure, right? Like time constraints and this pressure on healthcare providers, whether it's doctors or PAs or whoever, that like we have to fix it all, right? And so there, and within what, a 20-minute appointment too? So it's like, right. Oh, okay, like these labs are not looking great. Lose weight, come back, right? It's so, it's kind of that like easy thing and that individualized approach. And maybe a lot of patients and clients are looking for that, right? Because it's like, well, if you, you know, just tell me what to do, I'll do it type thing. But it's not like a community focus. Like how different would it be if there were, you know, if there was a healthcare provider that's like, let's look at like group education, let's look at, you know, let's look at your environment, let's look at areas that you're, you know, healthy in and start to kind of think like more larger picture and have a community focus. But with that, I think pressure on healthcare providers is what drives a lot of the sort of biases to really come out of like, oh, you live in a larger body, you need to lose weight, you must not be moving, you must not be eating well, right? And that comes out, and then that individual feels like, well, it's my fault, but there's no support. There's no empowerment. There's no like compassion, like you said, or ability to kind of think beyond that black and white. And so, yeah, we're up against a lot.
We sure are. And if we think about, you know, education early on, I mean, if I think about my education as a kid, thinking about nutrition, it was always very shame-based. It was like, we're eating all the toxic stuff in the world and like everyone should lose weight and everybody should stop eating sugar and poison and, you know, scary, very like you're irresponsible for wanting ice cream. Just there isn't a nurturing education approach when it comes to nutrition and health, which I think I might be able to speak for all of us to say that we believe in the power of nutrition, you know, of food. Food is life. And so there's not that introduction to nutrition where nutrition is not, there's not morality there. And then once you come out and you grow up in that environment, I mean, it's no wonder that we have such a distorted approach and understanding of nutrition.
Yeah. And it's a lot of the foundational stuff too. You know, I think like social media definitely plays a role and an impact, but what I've found with clients is the most hurtful stuff really comes from like, and again, not to point fingers, and parents can be well-intending, but those formative years, right? Those messages around food, around body, around what is and isn't okay, that's the stuff that sticks with people the most. And those food rules, whether they're family food rules or individual food rules that you've kind of picked up, are sometimes the hardest ones to do away with, you know, and that kind of sticks because you're talking about like foundational stuff that was told from little on that we've kind of fed and sort of ingrained. So I think that's hard. I had another thought and it just like totally, totally left, but hopefully it'll, oh, that's what it was. So coming back to like, you know, the nutrition education and what you're getting, I was recently curious about what are the other countries' health guidelines, right? Like if we look at Japan, what are they empowering their, the people of their country to look at? What about Brazil? You know, what about South Africa, like various different places? And what I thought was so beautiful is there was an emphasis and there was language around eat foods that are local to your culture, eat foods that, you know, are in season, eat foods with people you love. That time mm-hmm. and time again, that emphasis of your social connection. Eat with people if you can. Eat in a pleasurable environment. You know, respect your culture. Get curious about the traditions. And you don't see that with my plate, right? Like, nobody at the USDA yeah. is like, hey, you know, have a picnic in the park and bring, like, you know, fruits and vegetables and beer and cheese and all that kind of stuff.
Can you imagine?
I know, right? Right. So I like to do that too, where I'm like, okay, like, you know, there are health guidelines and there's no denying that there is science and research behind, like, you know, eating a wide variety of foods and the difference between, you know, whole grains and things like that, that part of like gentle nutrition. That's, you know, that's science, right? When we put away the human part and get to like the physiology part, we know, and we have like cool research. Nutrition is a hard research. But if you look at other countries and if you look at like that bigger picture again, right, of like the social element, the cultural element, being able to kind of incorporate that, like I don't even know, like, I don't think anybody has ever started to talk about that. Like, that is, it's so crazy to me, you know? And so mm-hmm. as we start to look at it, it's something I'm starting to do, but to be able to say like, hey, you know, here are health guidelines and you might resonate with something in a different part of the world, but what are the common themes, right, around the food groups and what are the things that are different and what do you like and what do you want to take from that external system again, like as you're starting to work on the internal stuff of how does hunger feel, how does fullness feel, how does movement feel, how does satisfaction feel, how can I get rid of the shit that has not served me, mm-hmm. and then within the external stuff, do I like, you know, Brazil's recommendations to eat with your friends and family? Do I want to take the rest guidelines that come from, you know, Japan and incorporate that? And that external stuff that professionals do study, right, and do know that we just don't, you get to pick and choose what works for you and kind of create that individualized plan for yourself. So, yeah, I think it's important to look at, like, the education and the community and what you're getting, and also, like, open the doors for people to see, like, there are messages that you might like that could be considered external, right? But those serve a purpose, too, and we can blend that all in together. Yeah.
Beautiful.
You guys are like getting me excited about my job again, because really, I mean, it's beautiful and it's also taxing and it's really hard to hear like the awful trauma that people have, you know, experienced with food. And, you know, it's our job as humans, but also like healthcare providers, to like, we got to take care of ourselves in order to have that sustainability. But it's really cool to like, yeah, recall and remember and provide resources and just like share and talk about the good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This has been such a fun conversation. I feel like we could talk to you all day long about this. So thank you so much for being here. I did want to ask you, this is kind of a non-intuitive eating related question, just like a fun question, or so we think it is. We wanted to know, what is the best meal you've had in the past 6 months to a year? What's a meal that like you're just like, holy shit, this was like...
So I'm going to give a shout out to my friends here in Denver, if anybody is listening in the Denver area. They're actually, I'm not vegan or plant-based, but they actually have an anti-diet. They're called the Easy Vegans, and they've been doing pop-ups at a local restaurant. And they're like plant forward with a very like culinary artistic twist. And I'm Polish and I make my own pierogies, but they made, it was like, oh God, it was miso, potato, like black garlic pierogies. And I was with one of my best friends eating this meal, and I was just, all I could say was, wow, 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 wow. And I was almost felt like violated, or because I was like, shit, like I can never make pierogies ever again, because like, how do I, you know, top this? And that's like, you know, it was so delicious and so good. So, and I think what's so beautiful about them, that I just happen to know them is, like, they love food and they love each other and they love feeding people and they are very anti-diet. Like, they're not promoting, like, vegan as, like, a super healthy diet or anything like that. But that's, yeah, kind of what came to me. And it would, especially after, like, COVID, being able to, like, support mm-hmm. somebody's local business and eat out mm-hmm. at a restaurant again, a pop-up. And the food is just, like, so good. I would say pierogies is specifically theirs.
Yeah, man. That's an amazing answer.
Yeah, your answer was quick as hell, which means it was truly incredible.
Well, I was like thinking about some recipes that like I've made too, and like I like to cook, and I'll give myself credit that like it's good, but their food just like blows you out of the water. And yeah.
That's
awesome. Yeah.
Okay, when I go to Denver, I'm gonna look them up for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the name of it?
They're called The Easy Vegan. And yeah, they have an Instagram account, which can totally just like inspire love of food too. So even if you're not able to eat it, it's just a good account to follow.
Easy awesome. Vegan. Good tip.
Yes.
Well, Natalie, it has been such a pleasure to have you with us today. Amazing conversation. I think you need to come back in the future.
I think
like,
you need
we
to.
We have plenty more to talk about. Yeah, we could mm-hmm. go on and on forever. It's been a pleasure having you be here to share your experience with our listeners and just kind of, you know, explore these concepts with us today. So tell our lovely listeners, I'm sure there's going to be people who listened and are like, oh my God, this Natalie girl is cool as shit and I need mm-hmm. to find her. So can you tell our listeners how they could connect with you?
Yeah, for sure. So my business name is Benevolent Bodies. I have a website at benevolentbodies.com where you can see my services, groups, one-on-one, and trying to work on more food blogging and providing delicious recipes for people as well. And then on Instagram at Benevolent Bodies as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Until next time, because there will be one.
Thank you. I look forward to coming back.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.